What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, great to have you with us on a Thirsty Thursday, coast to coast on Sports Grid. And we bring in the mad scientist now, the great Warren Sharp. He's styling at home, very edgy, getting ready for the divisional semis this weekend and all the great games. You know, he's going to break it all down for us each game this entire hour. You should be on at Sharp Football on X. If you're not, then shame on you for 6 weeks. And you should follow sharpfootballanalysis.com. If you're not on there, then you're really foolish. I don't know what is wrong with you. I mean, honestly, I've been telling you this for a couple of years now. You got to get with the program, son. This isn't a joke. All right, Warren, good to see you. I want to start out here with your opinions of some of the coaching situations. And first of all, the news of McCarthy sticking in Dallas.
I think that's typical from Jerry Jones. He talks tough. He acts tough. But the dog does not bark. You know, he's all bark but no bite. He went out. I looked at the roster. I don't know if I look back at the coaching tree that this guy had at one point in time with a lot of coaches. Todd Bowles was in his building as an assistant. Sean Payton was in his building as an assistant. He goes out and brings in Jason Garrett to run the offense over Sean Payton. Like, some of the coaching decisions this guy makes are pretty ludicrous. And sticking with Mike McCarthy, I understand that you've had successful years with Mike McCarthy if you care just about what you do in the regular season. And personally, this team should have been developing to make runs through the playoffs, and they're not taking advantage of it. And it, in large part, is because of Mike McCarthy. We'll talk about this Green Bay Packers defense and some of the things that they changed up in this game. But Mike McCarthy, what does he do? He takes on the play calling himself. He doesn't like the fact that this team went 12-5 last year and didn't do anything in the playoffs. So he says, we're replacing the offensive coordinator. I'm going to take the play calling. I'm going to be the one in charge. And what does the team do? The exact same thing as what they did last season. And this guy is not the answer as a play caller. This guy is not the answer as the head coach to take them to the promised land. And I understand it might be challenging to go after a new coach and the new strategies that might be involved. Then I get it. All the players, of course, are going to be arguing and lobbying in favor of keeping Mike McCarthy. Why? Think about it. If you're an underperforming employee of a company, or even if you're a reasonable employee of a company, and you're happy there, you're getting paid, you don't have to do anything new, you don't have to impress a new boss, you don't have to change up your habits or your strategies, because you know you have the opportunity to get the same guy, your same boss, to come back in there the very next year. Of course you're going to lobby for consistency and not needing to change anything. You don't want to have to deal with that. But the reality is they probably should have gone out and gone after one of these other big name coaches that are available on the market, or gone out after one of the younger guns who are going to be calling plays offensively that could potentially take this team to the next level. Like we're seeing a lot of the coaches in this round of the playoffs, some of the younger guys are in here who were developed and thought, oh, we hired a young guy. He doesn't have enough experience. We haven't seen enough out of him. But guess what? These guys have taken their time, built some of their teams, and now they're in the playoffs.
We welcome our radio affiliate, Sirius Channel 159, our satellite partners all over the Southern Hemisphere and Sports Byline, and their radio affiliates out of San Francisco. Deepak holding it down for us. We're with Warren Sharp on Coast to Coast, per usual, on a Thursday for the entire 4 Eastern hour. So, look, you know, you win the East, so what? You win 12 games every year, so what? Your quarterback is top 5 in about 3 categories in the NFL. Oh, so let's give him $50 million now. He was making $40 million. He never wins playoff games. The coach never wins playoff games. They haven't won playoff games in 30 years. And I got to tell you, Warren, when it was 27-0, I said on the air, he should be fired right now at halftime. They scored to make it 27-7, and Burkhardt and Olsen were selling the second half. It can happen fast in this league, as those two were humiliating themselves for the entire second half, counting the ways that the Cowboys were going to come back and win the game. The game was over when it was 27-0. I would have fired his ass right then and there, and George Steinbrenner would have fired his ass right then and there. I think he's soft now, and his son doesn't have any stones either because he does whatever daddy tells him. He's like a lap dog.
Well, he lied to get the job in the first place. He said he watched all this film. He understood what the team did wrong. He was going to be the guy to come in there and correct it. And then his opening press conference after getting the job, a reporter asked him, you know, how did it go watching all the film? He said, I got to admit, I lied about that just to try to get the job. I mean, this is how he started his tenure, duping people and tricking people like he actually knows what he's doing. And then when we see that clearly he does not, and to your point, last week's game, the rate that they were running the ball on these second downs, and the fact that the Green Bay Packers and Joe Barry, of all people, who has struggled as a defensive coordinator for years, who, if you ask the Packers faithful, should we hire Joe Barry? Should we keep Joe Barry? Should we fire Joe Barry? All of them are voting to fire Joe Barry. None of them really like Joe Barry and what he does with this defense. And yet, Joe Barry somehow outcoached, outsmarted, outfoxed Mike McCarthy in a playoff game down in Dallas. And when they sat back and played a little bit more too high, when they decided not to blitz, Mike McCarthy says, well, maybe I'll just hand the ball off and run the ball. Even though their run plays were not working all year and did not work in the game, they refused to change up their strategy and their approach. So there's no doubt about it. From an in-game perspective, from a strategic perspective, I have my questions about Mike McCarthy, and I don't really see anything that he's doing. I went back and looked at, you know, naturally the Cowboys have had a good record. They've played in a ton of games that they're favored over their opponents. They play in a division that had a bottom two teams that are not very good. They played a softer schedule in general, and so they've racked up a bunch of wins. Go look at the times when this team was not supposed to win a game, which, you know, Mike Vrabel is the exact opposite. Look at this team, the Dallas Cowboys, when they're an underdog. What is their record when they're an underdog? It's not a great ATS record. They do not outperform expectations. He does not take his guys and coach them up to another plane, another level of, you know, expertise, or not just expertise, but like of performance. He just does not get them there. And so you can blame some of the players, you can blame some of the execution, but to me, as a general coach, as well as a tactician, a strategist, like somebody who's going to game plan really well, I don't think he checks any of those boxes. So, you know, we'll see. It's great. It's a great day for the Philadelphia Eagles. It was a great day for the Washington Commanders, for the New York Giants, and for any other team in the NFC that saw him get extended here by Dallas Cowboys, or at least not get fired, because this team, I just think it's going to never reach its full ceiling potential based on its talented roster with him there.
All right, so we're clear. Belichick's going to have a second meeting with the Falcons. Let's stop with all this nonsense that it's a second interview when you're Bill Belichick and you've been to 9 Super Bowls and you've coached for 100 years. This is either get him to sign on the dotted line this weekend in Atlanta, or Arthur Blank and all of his minions are idiots. I think the one that everybody is interested in is Vegas. I know that Harbaugh went to see the Chargers and nothing came of it yet, and now – you got Vrabel in there interviewing with him. Washington, Tennessee, Seattle, Carolina. I don't think anyone gives a rat's ass about. I want to see if Harbaugh goes to the NFL. I want to see if Pierce gets the job in Vegas. And I want to see that the Falcons don't screw up Belichick this weekend. We got a lot to do with the mad scientist, Warren.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We're talking to the great Warren Sharp on Coast to Coast, getting ready for the divisional semis that start on Saturday. The first game up is at 4:30 in the Charm City at the Bank. It's the Texans and C.J. Stroud taking on the MVP, Lamar Jackson, and the best team in the NFL, the Baltimore Ravens. They proved that on Christmas Day when they smacked the Niners around in Santa Clara. I don't care what anybody says. I'm doing the game. I'll be on live, in-game live, all access on Saturday with Joe Ranieri doing this game from 4 to 8, kickoff at 4:30. So the number's 9.5. It's gigantic. And 43.5, Warren. Why don't we start by talking about what C.J. Stroud has accomplished? Last week, I thought he looked fantastic against Cleveland. First play of the game, the 75-yard bomb to Nico Collins. You nailed that. I mean, to tell you, like, I mean, it was like pin the tail on the donkey. The first play of the game, you hit that prop, and we were all talking about it. Great call by you.
Yeah, look, C.J. Stroud, and this is what he does, and this is what I want to talk about. What can he do this in Baltimore? This team has the second highest air yards per attempt on early downs in the first three quarters of games. They like to throw the ball and push it down the field with C.J. Stroud. And to your point, like over the season, obviously, he's been brilliant. We were on him early in the year, identifying him as a standout performer, even though the offense around him wasn't great, even though the offensive line wasn't healthy and giving him proper protection. He was overcoming some of those things, and we saw those flashes. We knew he was going to be special early on. It was fun to back him and some of the totals early on. Then we get down here to the later stretch of the year where he's got a little bit better health around him. His offensive line's a little bit healthier. But the issue now is, you know, the wide receiver depth and health. But the key that I'm focusing in on, because it's their identity, is we like to push the ball down the field when we pass it on these early downs in the first three quarters. Like I said, second highest air yards per attempt and the fifth highest rate of passes thrown 15-plus yards down the field. So they need to be able to try to get that accomplished in Baltimore. The issue is it going to be windy? This game is projected to have winds. It's still a few days. Well, what is it? 2 days away. We'll see what weather looks like on game day on Saturday. But as of right now, they're saying like 18 to 19 mile per hour winds with gusts in the upper 20s. That may affect a quarterback who is accustomed to playing in a dome and throws deep a lot. Now he's going outdoors in Baltimore in a bit of wind. Those passes may not have the exact same precision and accuracy. Second element is he's going up against a defense in the Ravens that's elite against stopping this. If you look at what the Ravens have done against early down passes the first three quarters of games, they're number one in EPA per attempt, number one in yards per attempt, number two in completion rate, number three in success rate. And every single one of these metrics, they are vastly above what the NFL averages. And then you look at what C.J. Stroud has done against the other teams that he's gone up against. I mean, the defenses that he has played, particularly on the road, away from home, have been terrible against these deep passes. If I look down and see what did these other teams do, number 31 ranked Carolina Panthers against early down deep passes. Number 30 Titans, number 29 Falcons, number 26 Colts, number 23 Jags, number 20 Bengals. The only team that ranked above 20th defensively against these types of passes were the New York Jets, who ranked 11th. And he obviously struggled in that game up in New York. Now he's going up against the number one defense in this regard. I've said it before. I will say it again. The way that you need to attack this Ravens defense is to run the ball early in the game, on the ground, try to get them to bring an extra man down in the box because they play with the number two highest rate of light boxes. If you come out and try to just throw the ball deep on these early down passes like you've been doing throughout the season, you are not going to really have success, in my opinion. You got to come out, and it's crazy to say, but because I rarely say this, you got to try to run the football here because that's what the Ravens' weakness is. They literally rank dead last in every single critical metric against the run on early downs in the first three quarters. They have also struggled a little bit more against runs from 21 personnel, which is an extra fullback out on the field. The Texans use that at a top five rate. They like to run the ball from 21 personnel. They need to try to get the run game going a little bit and then set up some play action once the Ravens bring an extra defender down into the box. So that's the roadmap for success for the Houston Texans. They have to be within fighting distance. If they fall behind in this game and they're down at halftime by double digits, you're just not going to have success. This is why the Ravens steamroll teams like the Lions and like some other teams that then get into this pass-oriented structure in the second half and do nothing but pass the ball because they're down by so much. The Ravens will eat that alive because of the sim pressures and the defense of Mike McDonald, and they're so good against the pass. If they take away your run game based on scoreboard pressure, the Texans are going to be in trouble.
I mean, D'Amico Ryans is smart enough as a coach. I think, you know, defensively, his mind works on that side of the ball, and he looks out and he knows that you're right. He knows you can run against them, and he also knows you cannot pass the ball against this team. They pick the ball off. I will never forget when Shanahan said, well, the first one was a solid pick, but the other three were all deflected. But where I come from, that means four picks. Any math you want to cut, Kyle, it's still four picks. You throw the ball against this team, you're going to have problems. Ryan D'Amico knows that they have to run the ball, so they have to have changed their game plan for this game, haven't they?
I think that they probably will come out understanding that they should look to get the run game going a little bit more here. This is something that's not unnatural to Bobby Slowick. You know, there have been some games that I've been frustrated at the rate of running the ball. Take, for example, the Indianapolis Colts. They played the Colts in that Week 18 game, and they came out too run heavy in that game. Now, they hit that one big bomb, and after that, they relied more on the run game. They almost lost that game, allowed the Colts to come back into it because they were running the ball so much against a good run defense that had a bad secondary. So there have been games where they've gone up and run the ball too much against good run defenses. This would be the time to take that game plan and move it over here. Run the ball against a bad run defense that has a really good pass defense. Now, if you talk about the other side of the ball, the other element to this game that I wonder, especially with the wind, is the fact that the Baltimore Ravens are elite passing the ball within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage on early downs. That is something that I mentioned the Texans like to throw the ball deeper down the field, and they're good at doing that on early downs. They actually are only league average, the Texans offense, at throwing the ball within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage on early downs. Meanwhile, the Baltimore Ravens offense is a top five offense throwing the ball underneath within 10 yards on early downs. They can throw deep, but if they need to, because of the weather, throw the ball short and underneath, they're going to have a much better chance of moving the football through the air against this Houston Texans defense than will the Texans offense against their own defense. And thus, I think there's an upside edge for the Baltimore Ravens if wind becomes a factor, because it's going to hurt the downfield passing of the Houston Texans, who aren't great throwing the ball underneath, and allow the Ravens to play to their strength, which is a lot of underneath passing.
Listen, and Lamar is such a lethal factor in his ability to escape pocket pressure, to roll, to run, to throw on the run across his body and get that strike like Allen the other night against the Steelers when he ran out and two linebackers are all over him by the sideline. He still went across the body and threw it to Diggs 12 yards for the first down. Lamar does that in his sleep. Not only that, they'll run the ball down your throat with him just handing the ball off to his backs, and then they'll also throw the ball down your throat. I mean, they do you three ways.
Yeah, there's the next game we'll talk about, I think, might have a little bit more dominance from an offense. But my main concern with Baltimore is just how do they come out? How do they get started in this game? We know that teams off of a bye in the playoffs, since they moved to only one team getting a bye particularly, they haven't started super quick. The Ravens need to understand they have to come out in this game, and they need to try to make the Texans as one-dimensional as possible. They've done a really good job down the stretch of scoring a ton of points in the first half of these games to get up by a big margin, to be able to play the way they want in the second half, and to dictate how the other offense needs to call plays against their defense. So we're going to look to see how quickly the Ravens can get started in this one. And, you know, there are some question marks there because of their playoff history, as well as the history of teams coming off of these byes. So hopefully they get started quickly with some nice game plans and play calls in that first opening script.
All right. So when we come back, we'll break down Green Bay and San Francisco, the Saturday nightcap. And we've got Warren's best bets, props. Are you ready? I know I am.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
This is a whole new jungle. This is The Lion's Share. Brought to you by BetMGM.
I mean, believe me if you want, and if you don't want to believe me, then have at it and have a sandwich with mayonnaise on it. But I've been hearing two things from my sources. One, I'm hearing from Sam Cheers Malone Yarnell that when Warren is at the National Harbor, he has been seen, literally documented, if anyone walks up to him and gives him $5, $158. Like anyone, like some old lady playing slots. She just slips a five, a Finsky to Warren walking through the casino right behind her chair there at the Wheel of Fortune, and he'll give her $158. Then like, I was like, this can't even be true. And then listen to this. I have a source. He lives right across the street from Warren in his neighborhood. And he tells me that he sees every day Warren's wife and kids. They give him a Finsky, and he gives his family members 158 every time they give him a Finsky. It's the most unbelievable thing that BetMGM picked up on it for Big Game 58. Now they're giving $158 to anyone that gives five in a bet. You make a bet, a standard odds bet for $5, and they're just handing 158 out. And like all the other sports books are trying to hand out free money, BetMGM gives them more money. They just topped everybody. They're like, we got the gold line worth billions. We're going to give people more money than everyone else. Screw everyone else. And Warren's walking around giving everybody money. His family, old ladies in the casino. It drives me nuts the amount of money this guy's got falling out of his pockets. Warren, your best bets, your props for this weekend. Let's start with Mr. Diggs.
Mr. Diggs in this one, we're going under his receiving yards, and there's a few reasons why. Number one is the playoffs. Refs tend to bottle up their flags. They hold on to them a little bit more, and the ref on this game is Sean Hockley. Sean Hockley calls the fewest DPI and illegal contact penalties in the NFL. How is that going to help? Well, number one, it's going to help because Legarius Sneed is the DB that's going to be covering Stephon Diggs. He's going to be following him around for Kansas City. Not only is he one of the best DBs in the NFL, he also is penalized at one of the highest rates. He does not like to let people get catches on him. He would rather have a penalty come rather than let a guy catch a big pass on him. And as a result, he might be tugging and holding on Stephon Diggs a little bit more frequently in this one. And the refs may not actually call it. And number two, Diggs has gone under this 7 of the last 10 games. He's not been as much of a focal point. They're probably going to need to come out and run the ball a little bit more here. So I like Diggs under his receiving yards.
Let's go to Baker Mayfield, the toast of Tampa, taking his show on the road to the Motor City.
Yeah, in this one, I'm going to go over. I like Baker Mayfield over his passing yards, and I think the logic makes sense. Over 255 and a half passing yards since week 7. He's gone over in the passing prop in 9 of 13 games. He's 8-1 to the over in his last 9 games played outside of his division. Think about his division. He's going up against teams like the Carolina Panthers and Bryce Young. Don't have much of an offense. The Atlanta Falcons run the ball a ton. Don't have much of an offense. Outside of the division, 8-1 to the over last 9 games. They're a 6.5-point underdog. They're more than likely going to need to be passing. They're finally going up against a defense that's really stout against the run. And think about what the Bucs did just last week. They came out against a Eagles team that you could run on, but decided to change things up and go with a pass-heavy approach. I think they packed that up from Tampa. Take it to Detroit, come out. Baker has to throw the ball a lot in this game, over on his passing yards.
All right, so Diggs under 64.5 receiving yards. Mayfield over 253.5 passing yards. What about Brock Montana Purdy? What do you got going with the San Francisco quarterback?
So ironically, you think of Brock, you don't think of this, but the long ball with Brock. I'm going over his longest completion. I believe it's 39.5. Seems like a high number for sure. However, he has gone over this number since week 3, from week 3 to 16. In the 10 games that he played where Trent Williams was up, Debo was up, there were 10 of those games. He's gone over this number in 9 of 11 games. I think I said 10. 9 of 11 to the over. And the 49ers, surprisingly enough, when they do pass the ball on early downs in the first 3 quarters, have the 4th highest target depth in the NFL, and the Packers' defense has struggled against it. Dak Prescott, for whatever reason, Mike McCarthy, big-brained, out of throwing the ball deep. On early downs, first 3 quarters, he completed 2 of 3 passes 15 yards down the field, did Dak last week, 21 yards a catch, but only tried 3 passes. Instead, they just threw the ball short and ran it a ton, and neither of those was very successful. I think Brock Purdy and Kyle Shanahan will have some success throwing the ball down the field, at least 1 catch of 40-plus yards.
All right, again, Diggs under 64.5 receiving yards, Mayfield over 253.5 passing yards, and Purdy, longest completion, over 39.5 yards. I hope you wrote those down, Simpleton Brath, so you can make some money off of Warren Sharp. It's like free money. It's just unbelievable. All right, Green Bay roasted the Cowboys. Jordan Love roasted Dallas' secondary all night long. The Packers' defense was unbelievable. Then I heard him saying, gee, you think they can do this out in San Francisco against the Niners? And people have their doubts. I want to know what you think their chances are going to Santa Clara to see the top seed.
Well, they're going to have to run the ball a little bit early in this game because they need some balance. They can't just have Love step back to pass over and over again. And I think if they use outside zone, they may have some success here. Look at some of the stats. The 49ers this year versus outside zone ranked 31st in yards per carry allowed, 31st in EPA per rush, and 31st in explosive run rate. And when Aaron Jones is on the field running the football, the Green Bay Packers use 43% outside zone rate. They call it at a very high rate. Whereas when it was A.J. Dillon, only 29% of the time, were they calling outside zone. So they're going to need to call more outside zone runs. They can have success. The 49ers have gone up against a lot of offenses that have not really utilized outside zone concepts very frequently. Now they're going to get one in the Green Bay Packers. I think the Packers are going to have to come out here aggressively. Now, they've had success the last two times they've been out in California, in San Francisco, at scoring points early. They scored 21 first-half points. In their meeting in 2020, they scored 17 first half points in their meeting in 2021. They did not go out there last year. This year, they're going to have to, once again, try to figure out a way to start quickly. But I'm worried about the San Francisco 49ers and the fact that I think this defense of the Green Bay Packers got, you know, they did a great job coaching and scheming against Mike McCarthy. I think they're going to run into a different situation here with Kyle Shanahan and Brock Purdy because they can attack you on so many different levels. And I was trying to look at the different props for receivers, whether it was Deebo Samuel because he's great against zone, or Brandon Ayuk because he's great when blitzed and the Packers blitz a lot, or you look at the tight end George Kittle because the Packers just stink against tight ends. It's hard to pick one of these guys that I think I should focus on because I think all of them have matchup edges and should have some success against this defense, which is why ultimately one of the reasons I went with the Brock Purdy longest completion over. And then you look at the ground game. You know, the Packers tried to play this defense where they sat back, encouraged the Cowboys to run the ball, so the Cowboys did and couldn't do anything because their rushing attack stinks. That's not the case here for the 49ers. I think the 49ers offense, whether they run, whether they throw to a tight end, whether they throw to a receiver short or deep, they're going to have success all the way across the board as long as they keep Brock Purdy upright and don't allow him to get pressured much. For these reasons, I think this game is going to be a little bit interesting. It's going to be on for the Green Bay Packers to try to keep up. They're going to have to be playing catch-up in this one.
I mean, Aaron Jones was unbelievable against Dallas. Three TDs, the guy went off. You don't think he can run against San Francisco's defense?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to need to. That outside zone is what has given the San Francisco 49ers problems. If the coaching staff keys in on that and they continue to utilize high rates of outside zone, I think they will be able to have some success here. But if you go and try to use inside zone against the 49ers, you're going to be in for a world of problems, in my opinion. So if they utilize outside zone and run in situations that are beneficial to run in, you do not want to be predictable with your runs, and you do not want to be running on second and tens just to try to get a mix in a run play. You need to try to balance it up and keep this defense on their toes.
I heard Dan Campbell talking about, we got three left. We got this one. We got next week. And then we got one more after that. And, you know, I come from the, you know, we got to deal with what's in front of us right now. They got a Tampa team that just stuck their foot down Philadelphia's throat, killed them in Raymond James, Baker Mayfield throwing for a ton of yards, lighting it up. They had it all going. Are the Lions looking past Tampa Bay? I mean, I already heard it right out of his mouth. We got one more next week, and then that's the title game. Then we're going to the Super Bowl. They got to worry about this team they're playing this weekend.
Absolutely, they need to. And in fact, they almost lost the game against the Rams due to their play calling from Ben Johnson. And I know Dan Campbell likes to run the football, so maybe this played into it. But let me show you some stats last week as to why the Lions got out quickly, scored points, and then that game almost came down to the very end of the game, and they almost lost it. Here's why. In the first quarter of that game last week, they went 60% pass on first downs, and they ran the ball a lot out of three wide receiver sets. Therefore, the defense might have been expecting a little bit more passes, and they went to the run in that situation, and they gained 5.7 yards per carry. In the second half of the game, they had only a 22% pass rate on first down, not a 60% pass rate. They went 78% run on first down, and they were running a lot from heavier personnel groupings, which was predictable. The defense knew it was going to be a run, and as a result, the Rams loaded the box on 86% of those run plays, and they limited the rushing attack to gaining just 0.6 yards per carry on first down runs in the second half. As a result, they faced so many long yardage to go distances on third down. They faced an average of 9.8 yards to go, and it caused them a ton of problems. They converted those third downs at a 20% success rate. If the Lions are so fortunate enough to build a lead in this game, they absolutely must figure out a way to stay aggressive in the second half, because Baker, with these wide receivers, as long as they can protect, that's the biggest question I have. Can the Tampa Bay Buccaneers protect against the Lions pass rush? If they can protect, they're going to have success exploiting a weaker Detroit Lions secondary. The Lions can't afford to take their foot off the gas, or they may blow a lead late.
I couldn't believe they didn't get that game over the way it started and where they were at halftime, and then it just died. It hit a wall. I couldn't believe it.
And that was Ben Johnson in their play calling offensively, running predictably with heavy personnel, gaining 0.6 yards per carry, punting on third down when they couldn't convert because they averaged almost 10 yards to go.
All right, let's focus now on the game that everybody seems to be licking their chops for, and it's the 6:30 game on Sunday at Highmark in the Belo in Orchard Park. The Bills, Josh Allen against Mahomes and the Chiefs, the defending champs, finally playing a road playoff game. What's your initial thoughts?
I mean, the Bills need to come out and utilize James Cook on the ground and through the air, just like they did the last meeting. Try to duplicate that as best possible. You can have some success running on the Chiefs. I do not think you're going to have a lot of success throwing the ball on the Chiefs. Like I just mentioned, Legarius Sneed might take away Stephon Diggs to some extent, especially if the Bills are in a close game. Are they going to try to force that in there to that tight coverage against a really good DB and risk interceptions, or are they going to look to utilize some of their other options? I think they will do the latter, but they need to be able to run the ball. And Josh Allen, I believe Josh Allen's going to have a fair amount of rushing attempts here. If you look back at what he's done against this Steve Spagnuolo defense, they continue to ratchet up his rushing attempts. The difference is Spag's run defense has been great. They've been limiting these rushes, whether they're scrambles or designed runs, to very minimal yardage. The last couple of years, he has not had a lot of yardage, which is one of the reasons I bet Josh Allen's rushing attempts over, but did not touch the yardage. I don't think he's going to have a big, now anything's possible, a big like 30, 40 yard run like he did last week against the Steelers. So they're going to have to come out and figure out a way to run the ball and keep that Chiefs offense on the sideline and try to matriculate it up the field. I think this game is going to be tight and lower scoring.
I think that was a 52 yard run against the Steelers with the fake slide. And then late in the game when he did slide, he got kissed by Jack, and they gave him a roughing the passer penalty, which I am still not over at all.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Warren heard it, Carver High refusing to come back on the show at 5 o'clock at the top of the hour because he hears me complaining about the Bills-Steelers game again. He just walked out of the building and left to get a drink, and he gave the finger to Mafia and said, I'm not doing any more shows with him. He's sick of hearing it. But I want to ask you, Warren, Hockley, your boy, Eddie Hocker, who's he going to throw the most yellows at on Sunday in Buffalo? Because these two crybaby, Oscar-winning, Golden Globe, Emmy-winning actors in Mahomes and Allen, the two biggest whiners in the NFL, are going head-to-head.
Yeah, you're right. These guys love to turn to the refs and ask for a flag after there's a contested hit on
anything.
Them that may or may not have actually been roughing the passer, but they're going to try to act and try to draw that flag. And Sean Hockley will fall for that, in my opinion. He has thrown the most roughing the passer penalties of any ref this year. The other thing that we should be able to expect in this game is that these refs tone down their offensive holding calls. And the Chiefs and the Bills both are victims of having too many offensive holding penalties on their own lines. But the Bills, when they play at home, really force other teams to hold a little bit more, and those usually get called. If the refs are not calling as much offensive holding, that's a slight advantage to the Kansas City Chiefs, who are the road team playing in Buffalo, where most road teams have a lot of offensive holding called against them. There could be a penalty, like a roughing the passer, that decides this game. It flips some field position potentially in a closely contested game. And I think both of these quarterbacks are going to be moved around the pocket, trying to find something down the field, getting a little bit frustrated and using their legs a little bit more. And there could be some of those hits.
Which one was worse, the Wilkins shove on Mahomes or the Jack finger push-up rollover on Allen. Which call was worse?
I thought the Jack one was pretty bad. The Wilkins one wasn't great, but the Jack one was.
That's why I like you. That's right. Yeah, hey, tell Carver High to put his drink down and come back in here and do the show. Fans come back, and all those Bill fans. Now I have to root for the Bills. I lost a bet. Now I got to root for the Bills the rest of the way. Warren, I love you. Great stuff, buddy. Enjoy the games this weekend.
Oh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, lady luck?
Britsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just $10.
$10 for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.